Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Do you remember the year 2012 in September? That's when amateur hour first began. Just two friends talking about the Chiefs. The team was awful. A lot's changed since 11 years ago. Now we have Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. And oh yeah, we won a Super Bowl.
You're welcome.
It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour to start. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, oh yeah.
Wow. Let's go!
Yeah! That's right, folks. The show's called Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. And joining me today is a man named His Dirkness.
Deuce up!
I see what you did there. I just want you to know that although you're unaware of this until this moment, you are learning right now, I've out-Duval'd you today.
Or at least I
was the original Duval pun, even though you probably put that in your notes.
It's a Duval off. It's a David Duval off.
Well, the name of this episode is the Duvalginal round preview.
Oh yes, yes. So, well, the show's not going to beat the title, so I mean, we got to work it out for us, I guess.
So, how was your super wild card weekend?
Oh, pretty nice. Pretty nice. Enjoyed some football. Lots of close games. Lots of teams. I don't know. Were they looking ahead? I mean, neither Bills or Bengals looked particularly good. I don't know if they were looking ahead. I don't know if that should be a warning for the Chiefs to not look ahead. But, you know, in the AFC, at least, it was some close games between them. And I honestly didn't even know if I wanted them to go down or I want to see this Bengals and Bills game so bad that I was in the back of my mind, I was kind of cool with both of them winning anyways.
You know,
I was going to feel cheated. If we never got Bills Bengals, I was just going to feel cheated like this whole season. Like, I'm too invested in this damn game. Just let it happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I kind of found myself feeling a little torn. In the middle of those games when, you know, the score's tight and stuff like that, you know, you're kind of thinking like, oh man, it'd be really nice for one of these teams to go down. But, you know, got the chalky results, whether they were necessarily expected or not, the, you know, top three seeds advance outside of the Chiefs, 2, 3, and 4, making it into the next round in the AFC. I thought it was kind of wild that every single wild card game on both conferences was a rematch from the regular season. And that might explain a little bit of at least Bengals Ravens and Bills Dolphins. Those are the third time that those matchups have happened this season. And like, as everyone was probably feeling during Jags Chargers, I didn't want to play the Chargers a third time. I mean, there's reason to be confident, but I would imagine that if the Chiefs were playing the Chargers this weekend rather than the Jaguars, whom we'll get to, I think that it would probably look a lot like the games we just watched over Super Wild Card Weekend in the AFC. It probably would have been tight, it would have been frustrating, and it would have come down to the wire. That was my expectation. I was feeling not super enthusiastic when the Chargers were up 27-0, and I'm like, just crap. a team I don't want to play next week.
Yeah, so I mean, it would have been like every other Chiefs Chargers game we've seen in the last, you know, three years here. I was kind of with you, especially when the Chargers jump up to that lead and you're just like, oh shit. But at the same time, it was almost kind of like false confidence because the Chargers really weren't doing a whole lot. I mean, I guess you want to give their defense credit, you can do that. But I mean, it's not like they were putting drives together or anything. It was just all it was Trevor Lawrence just throwing interception after interception. Just like, oh my God, this is a freaking meltdown.
Did he threw 4 or 5?
4 in the first half. I think it was at one point he was 4 of 16 for 30 yards and 4 picks. Man. Like that's bordering on like the worst quarterback game of all time, let alone a playoff game where you'd expect, you know, good quarterbacks to be existing. So that was crazy to see. And yet the entire time I'm sitting there, I'm watching with my brother, and the entire time we're just sitting there like, this is still doable. This is still doable. Even 27-0, we're like, get a score before half, and 27-7, that's doable going into the second half because the Chargers really haven't done much, and it's the Chargers. So, I mean, that was the whole reason of picking the Jaguars to win last week was basically, you know, on paper, this Chargers team is much better as they are with a lot of teams, but the Chargers just find a way to blow things. You know, game after game, week after week, season after season, it's just what the Chargers do. And it's just kind of, that was what the bet was on, was the Chargers eventually finding a way to blow it.
Yeah. Joey Bosa. And like, listen, all right. I have enjoyed a post game frustrated rant from many a Chiefs in my day, Travis Kelce among them. But boy, Joey Bosa,
that was embarrassing.
I'm embossing. I was beside myself when I saw that clip today. Like, really, man? That is a guy.
I mean, not only does it sound weak, but just like this weird sense of reality where like the refs are going back to the locker room and making fun of him for flagging him for 15 yards. Like, nah, bro, I don't think that's how things are going. They're just refs kind of doing their job. I mean, I'll hop on refs, I'll do things like that. But to think to that degree, he just sounded really weird, really weird.
The whole world is against him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, dude, you are one of the most privileged people that I can imagine. Anyway,
not to mention his helmet throw on the field was so fucking weak. It was like, make a fucking play and make his head. I couldn't believe Staley was the one that retrieved the helmet, and then he throws the helmet again. It was just like, whoa, clean it up, guys. This is embarrassing.
You know, so I was thinking about that game, and like, if we're not focusing on the Chargers aspect of it and thinking about this opponent coming up with Jacksonville, I look at some of the things that Jacksonville was able to do in that comeback, and some of the things that I guess the Chargers defense failed to do during that stretch. And something really started to jump out to me when you compare that Chargers defense to the Chiefs right now. Let me ask you this. You, as a big Chiefs fan, playing the Chargers twice a year for your whole life, and this iteration of the Chargers, although they've got, you know, a couple new pieces or whatnot, like, we kind of know what they want to do. When you think about that defense, what comes to mind for you? And maybe it's a matter of who and rather than what.
Of the Chargers defense?
Yeah.
I mean, interested of like right now or of like all time, or
I'm thinking this Chargers team this year, the team that was on the field against the Jaguars and blew a 27-0 lead.
I think they employ two of the most overrated players in the NFL in Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack.
Okay. I was really hoping you were going to say Derwin James, because I think if you were calling him overrated, I would love the spice on it because he's just so beloved across the league. But
how about JC Jackson? Throw him in there too.
Yeah, right. But I mean, if you look at the Chargers team, especially without JC Jackson, you know, and they obviously they deal with injuries every single year. But like that Chargers defense is built around Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, and then essentially having Derwin James to clean things up behind him. And so it's fearsome, these two edge rushers. This is like what everyone thinks you have to have to be successful on defense. And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, man, the Chiefs had more sacks than the Chargers did this year. Probably by a wide margin. I don't even need to look at it. I just know that they did. The Chiefs finished top five in sacks. And yeah, Chris Jones went out and had 15, but they probably got half a dozen guys that gave you four or five. And I just think that the Chiefs defense can attack you in terms of their pass rush all over the place. And I feel like what the Chargers are relying on is two guys. And mostly they're, you know, guy, they can play against the run, obviously. They're both very well-rounded players. But these guys are pure edge rushers, I would say. And I look at this Chiefs line, and it's like they're doing all the games. They're doing twists and stunts, and you never know what guy is going to beat you. And all these different guys can beat you. And I kind of think that the Chiefs defense is better than the Chargers defense, or at least better equipped to be able to like continue to pressure. And the Chargers, I mean, Brandon Staley, their head coach and really their defensive mind. I don't even know if they have a defensive coordinator. I'm sure that they do. And I'm sure he's, you know, going to get a job somewhere or something. But I know that Brandon Staley, very, very young guy, had one great year, his first year as a defensive coordinator for the Rams, and then got hired here. And it was mostly like, well, this guy is going to be able to get pressure with four, right? And sometimes even get pressure with three. Well, Spagnuolo wants to blitz the hell out of you. And you never really know where the pressure is coming from. And he designs all these exotic things. Like, this Chiefs defense is so different from the Chargers. And I just look at it and I think, you know, if the Jags offensive line is able to give Trevor Lawrence time like they were in the second half, they dominated that Chargers front those last couple of drives when Lawrence was basically perfect. And I'm like, I think Spags is going to rattle Lawrence by just sending heat at him throughout the game. And that's something that seemingly the Chargers just didn't have, that they just couldn't, they weren't, I don't know. Or maybe the Jags just played it well, but I feel like the Chiefs defense is better equipped to be able to hold a lead like that. Or really just to be able to rattle a guy, instead of just relying on your two primary pass rushers.
Well, yeah, and one of the things I noticed in rewatching, so I rewatched Chiefs and Jags from week 10. This game actually occurred. I was in Japan at the time. This was the game. I watched it, I don't know, like 24 hours after it actually happened at like 1 a.m. Pretty fun little rewatch for a seemingly nothing game at the time. It was one of the lower ones on the schedule. So I think it was the first team we had played with a losing record from last season.
I think it was the first noon game of the year, too, if that tells you anything about who we'd played so far.
Not for me, it was a 2 a.m. kickoff. But, you know, in rewatching that, they blitzed a ton. They blitzed the shit out of them. They brought slot guys a lot. And the Jags kind of, you know, the way to counter that, they called a lot of screens. I mean, a lot of screens. And they were not very successful. So it was kind of weird to see just screen pass after screen pass that did not work. One of the things I noticed in a rewatch, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see if you keep with the same mindset this week. Do you try to go vanilla on defense, or does Spags just go out there and dial it up? I'm expecting him to just dial it up. And your one job on defense this week is to confuse Trevor Lawrence, and make him see things that aren't there, and get pressure after him. And, you know, hey, here's your first road playoff game inside Arrowhead Stadium, a sort of welcome to the NFL moment for him.
You know, one of the big things that I remember from that first game, and look, I could be wrong about the matchups, But I believe in watching that game that I was super frustrated that Spags never adjusted the matchup of Snead in the slot on Christian Kirk. That Christian Kirk was just beating Snead like a drum, that it, like, you looked at it and it's like, well, Snead's not built for those, you know, kind of shiftier slot guys. He can bully him a little bit, but like, Kirk is a great route runner. And I mean, he whooped him. And I think that like most of what Kirk did that day was with Snead in coverage. And I'm just sitting here thinking like, man, in this game, it feels like a really obvious shift to me. I'm putting Snead on Zay Jones every play. Just let him shadow Zay Jones and try to close that matchup down as best you can. And McDuffie's going to be on Kirk in the slot.
I had that exact same thing in my notes. Christian Kirk did have a huge game. A lot of it came against Snead. A lot of it came kind of matched up against the safety because they were blitzing that slot cornerback. So it was a lot of like quick reads off that, little dump off to Kirk. And, you know, it's Justin Reed in coverage or it's Juan Thornhill in coverage. Because I kept my eye on that because the first couple are definitely on Snead. And I was like, oh, boy, Snead gets beat a lot in this game, doesn't he? And then there's a touchdown at the end that Kirk scores. The game's essentially over, but still he just roasts him and Snead's not even really in position to even play defense on it. Yeah. He gets beat so bad. So yeah, maybe not the best coverage for him. Snead's, we've always talked about him. He's just kind of like an in the box kind of guy, not necessarily like a slot corner, at least your traditional type when McDuffie is. So McDuffie does seem like the natural position or player to guard Christian Kirk this week. And then on the outside, you know, Zay Jones and Marvin Jones, you know, maybe interchangeable there. You know, I don't know if you have to have Snead follow Zay Jones or just kind of have their guys play their side. But that totally seems like the right matchups to me. So it'll be interesting to see if they do that. They have been doing McDuffie in the slot a little bit when they're having Snead follow guys. So maybe that will be the strategy there. But not something that Spags traditionally does. We fired Bob Sutton? We fired Bob Sutton? Okay. Just check.
We got around. We did get around.
Hold on. Let me Google that. Okay, yeah, he's gone. Not something Spags typically does, but this does seem like a good week for it, and we'll see if they do it.
You know,
but something that... Can I just say I like these Jags weapons, though?
Oh, I do too.
Looking at the team like that.
We haven't mentioned, and I don't think he did anything in the first game, but like, dude, Evan Engram.
He did some things. He kind of touched on that, got called back, actually. I have the stats here somewhere, but so 3 for 14. He didn't do much. But Evan Engram lately has been an absolute monster. Like, he looks so fast out there. Like, I keep hearing them refer to him like as like kind of a tight end because he's always lining up wide kind of thing. And this is kind of what we always expected from Evan Engram. I think when he came in as a rookie, like he kind of looked like this and it's like, damn,
yeah,
Evan Engram's about to be a monster. I remember drafting him in fantasy and then it was just like 3 years of disappointment. And now all of a sudden, whatever happened, Evan Engram has been unleashed and it's been the second half of this season for the Jags. And so now with him and Christian Kirk and Zay Jones, people gave him a lot of shit for paying these guys money. And now they're really panning out, and those are good weapons. Marvin Jones in there is kind of the elder statesman. And then you got Agnew too, Jamal Agnew, who was a defensive back, I believe, and now is probably purely playing on offense. But he's kind of their Mecole Hardman, you know, Kadarius Toney kind of guy. He's going to come in and take jet sweeps, take screens, take reverses. And he is just as electric as those guys once he gets the ball in his hands. He's had some big plays in the little touches that he's had over the last couple of years.
You know, I agree. I think that this collection of weapons on the Jags is actually pretty impressive. And a guy that you didn't even mention is ATN, who when they drafted him, I thought it was just the dumbest thing. I did not understand it because I'm sitting here and I'm like, dude, James Robinson is actually very good. And I mean, he ended up getting traded to the Jets and like didn't do anything there despite Breece Hall going down and stuff. So I don't know if he's not healthy or what, but ATN is surprised me. I knew that he was obviously a great college player, but I just didn't know if it was going to work here, even with the relationship with Trevor Lawrence.
And ETN, yeah, he's at 5.1 yards per carry this year, which behind running backs is only behind Khalil Herbert, who only played half the year, and then Aaron Jones and Tony Pollard. So he would be fourth in terms of pure running back. There's quarterbacks ahead of them, but pure running back. So he's electric, and he has some games. He had like 150 yards on the Broncos. Like, he's done it against some good defenses too. So he's a guy, even last week, they did not, you know, only pass the ball once they got behind. He ended up with 20 carries, I believe, in that game. So they kind of stuck with the run, gave him some looks, and he actually broke that. It was him on that huge fourth down, right, where they line up in the T formation and give to him. Yeah. He's just so quick. And in doing a little further research, the Jags, they don't run it up the middle well. I think they were dead last in, like, running up the gut. They do a lot of their runs around the outside, which, you know, kind of fits with ETN because he's not really a grinder. He's kind of a good 1-2 with James Robinson if they would have kept him, because he seems like a guy who does his work between the tackles. And maybe they just wanted to scrap that completely, because now I think they just kind of use ETN and they stretch you horizontally with their speed.
You know, something that I think it's important for folks to remember, and maybe these numbers are like being tossed around a lot, but man, when the Chiefs and Jags played the first time, both teams were different, but the Jags were a completely different team. The Jags were 3-6. They had lost to the Texans. They lost to the Broncos. I mean, dude, they looked awful. But they also, like, took the Eagles down to the wire in that opening stretch, too. And then, you know, so they lose that Chiefs game. The Jags are 3-7. And since that Chiefs game, they've won 7 of 8 and now 6 in a row, including the Chargers playoff game. And, like, I mean, look, there's some stinkers in there. They beat the Titans twice, and, you know, they beat the Texans in there. But, like, I know they also beat Dallas, and the Chargers is in there. I mean, the Chargers is a good win.
They beat Baltimore with Lamar.
They beat the Jets, too. I mean, and like, the Jets have kind of up and down, but, like, it's a tough opponent, you know? I mean, this Jags team is playing their best football of the year. They're peaking at the right time. I do think that you can look at them and say, because of the kind of roller coaster season that they've had, and ultimately just knowing that Doug Peterson's a first year coach with that group, and how young they are, that I would say that the Jags probably aren't ready to beat the Chiefs and Arrowhead in the playoffs. That's how I feel. Can they? Yeah, it's totally possible. But I don't think they're ready. However, I think it's still going to be a pretty awesome game. I think the Jags can hang.
I was going to go with a bigger however there, because it almost feels like exactly what we were saying before we played the Bengals last year. Like, does it make sense that Joe Burrow in year two comes in to Arrowhead and wins the AFC Championship? Like, these guys aren't ready for this. Like, there's no way. This isn't their game. This is our game. And it's like, I even went back and looked at my notes going into that Bengals game last year. And it's, you know, 4 pages of Chiefs, Bills, holy shit. And then at the very end, you know, it's hard to get my mind wrapped around, like, playing the Bengals now, which kind of seems pertinent. But then in big bold letters, not one Chiefs fan thinks we're going to lose to the Bengals right now. And that's just, you know, confidence in the Chiefs and how good they are. The Bengals not being ready. Coming off a game like that against the Bills, it was more just like a statement of our collective belief right now. No one thinks we have a chance of losing. And then, you know, they did. But I just feel like a lot of the same things you could say about that game, you could say about this game. Like, is Trevor Lawrence really ready to come in and win a playoff game at Arrowhead in his second year? And it's, well, I guess
just threw 5 picks last week.
Yeah, maybe the 5 picks is like Joe Burrow getting sacked. How many times did he get sacked by the Titans? Like 17?
I think it was
17,
like,
times or something?
I think it was 9, actually, but that's still a ridiculous number.
So, I mean, but that's also, maybe that's in the Chiefs' favor, because they're ready. Hey, this is a lot like the Bengals. I think it's a similar line, 9 points. It's probably about how much we were favored over the Bengals last year. Be fucking ready this time and finish. You know, if you ever need a reminder to finish, hey, we're up 21-3 in a similar game last year that we end up losing. Hey, The Jags were down 27 last week and came back and won. So if you're ever going to see a team not take the foot off the pedal, it's going to be the Chiefs this week.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the Bengals angle. But I did kind of think that some of the Andy Reid, Doug Peterson familiarity would maybe play into it. But then also just the fact that the Jags had that comeback against the Chargers, and you know that these guys were watching the game, because like that was basically like the winner of that game felt like who you were going to play. And so I think that it was probably for them enough to be like, we have to take this team very seriously. This is not the 27-10 Jags. And so I thought that that was great for them, that the Jags were coming back on the night game on Saturday, and really felt like this is probably the most likely matchup, the winner of this coming in. And then to see the Jags do that, I assume it made the players take notice and lock in.
Yeah, I mean, instead of like, you know, like a ho-hum 16-13 win, like, this team isn't ready, but they, you know, they won last week, but you know, they're going to get slaughtered this week. We already beat them up earlier this season. We got the winner of Bills Bengals next week. Like, there'd be a lot of trap game potential there. But yeah, I think you're right with how that game played out. It has to have grabbed the Chiefs' attention.
So something else to maybe just keep in mind here. I would imagine by now everyone has heard it, but in case you haven't, in the AFC playoff field, not just the remaining teams, but the seven teams that made the AFC playoffs, the Chiefs happen to have the oldest starting quarterback in Patrick Mahomes at 27. I think we all knew this day would come. We all knew that the way that the AFC was being so aggressive about drafting quarterbacks, and it was like, God, is every good young quarterback in the AFC? The answer to that is still mostly, yeah. I mean, do you want to count Daniel Jones? Do you want to count Kyler Murray? Do you want to count Purdy? Like, I mean, the AFC is truly loaded with young players at the quarterback position. And now Mahomes is the oldest starting quarterback in the AFC playoffs. Here's the thing that I love about it is that he is the oldest, and it's not like, you know, randomly Ryan Fitzpatrick makes the playoffs at age 32 and it's like, hey, Fitzpatrick's the oldest quarterback in the playoffs, but he's not really experienced, right? Mahomes is the oldest at 27, very clearly the most experienced and accomplished of all of these quarterbacks, despite his young age. And he still hasn't played a road playoff game. It still hasn't happened. And regardless of what happens this weekend, he still won't have played a road playoff game.
Yeah, technically will not. Yeah, I think that's right.
So I feel like, hey, look, maybe you guys knew already. The Chiefs are in good hands.
I would agree. Confirmed.
Let me ask you this, Dirk. If you were to, this was a pretty key piece of preparation for today's show. I went to Google and I typed in the word Jaguars. And Google will show you the Jacksonville Jaguars results, and then it will say, people also ask. And they gave me four things that people also ask when the word Jaguars is being Googled. I'm guessing these are the top four things that are being asked about the Jaguars this week.
Yep.
Question number one. Who's favored to win, Jaguars or Chiefs?
I'm going Chiefs.
The Chiefs are favored. Question number two in the people also ask Google results for Jaguars. Has the Jaguars ever won a Super Bowl? That is that Florida education system. Question number three. Are there Jaguars in Jacksonville? Are they native to Florida?
I believe yes.
And number four, who is number seven on the Jaguars? The answer is Zay Jones.
Zay Jones.
Those were the top four Google results for Jaguars.
I thought for sure it was going to be how to pronounce Jaguars.
Right.
That didn't make it, because all week, it's a whole bunch of Jaguars getting their Jaguars crossed. Which I was looking up this way. I was even practicing. Apparently with Google, you can do a back and forth. You can talk to it so you can pronunciate it. So I was perfecting my Jaguars pronunciation. Mm. And I was crushing it. Google loved it. Jaguars, not correct. Not correct.
One player that was crushing, quote unquote, the Kansas City Chiefs in this first matchup is Andre Sisco, who's probably, I'm thinking, going to be kind of public enemy number one for the offense this week. I like that they're probably thinking, like, look, this asshole knocked Juju out of the game. A few plays later, I think we were worried that he had knocked MVS out of the game. He also ended up with a pick, one of the three turnovers that the Chiefs had on the day. And I believe that the onside kick that the Jags recovered to start the game is not included in the plus three that Jaguars were, because technically the Chiefs didn't possess the ball and lose possession. So Jags stole four possessions in that game. Andre Sisco getting an interception being one of them. And he just seemed like, you know, both of the hits that he had seemed like defenseless receiver, things that should have been flagged, and neither one of them got flagged. And I know Chiefs fans were really upset. And so I kind of like that there's a bad guy over there that they might be able to focus on a little bit. Now, I don't really know what you do to give Andre Sisco a long day unless you try to just hit him somehow, block a safety. We'll see. But I do know that Andy's probably going to be drawing something up here or there. And maybe the guys are going to have a little bit of an extra edge for one Andre Sisco.
I know there is a lot of heat on Sisco this week. Honestly, I watched it. Neither of those hits really did much for me. They were big hits. Dirty? I didn't think so.
Boo.
But Sisco's biggest and dirtiest hit is clearly the thong song.
I mean, as soon as you slowed down, I knew it was coming, and I love that you went there.
I wish I could have queued it up. I wish I could have queued it up. I did not have it ready. It is my ringtone, but I haven't taken a call in quite some years. No, I mean, honestly, I mean, they're hard fucking hits. And
that's, you know, sort of doing his job.
They say, well, yeah, I mean, it's a safety. The first one probably should have been flagged and did knock Juju out. The second one's on MVS. Both of them is kind of shoulder. But the first one just kind of goes to Juju's head. I mean, I think if it's dirty, you're going to be, you know, head down leading with your helmet. If you're using the helmet as a weapon, I think that crosses the line as dirty. This is just hard. And to a defenseless receiver, you know, and it just didn't hit me the same as Thong Song when I'm a defenseless listener.
So if we're thinking,
hitting me hard.
If we're thinking about the Chiefs offense, you know, we talk a little bit about Mahomes. We think about Andre Sisco. I mean, the Chiefs did not struggle to score against the Jags the first time around. I would imagine that their defense has improved in some way since then, given the streak that they're on. But when we were kind of talking before the show, you're talking about some of these guys on their defense, and like, I know a few of the names, but I don't really know a whole lot of these guys. And I think you even said that they had a couple that were like rated very highly. What can you teach us about this Jaguars defense? And maybe like, is there a spot that the Chiefs are really going to be successful in? I mean, you rewatch the game against them, and is there something you think Andy's going to bring back, try to continue to plug away at? Or what are we looking at? What are we looking at here?
Well, a few notes on them. Their weakness, I think, is pass defense. They rank pretty low in pass defense across the board. Although they do have a corner rated very highly. I know very little about him. Tyson Campbell So he's the sixth rated corner on PFF. So keep an eye on him. They got Alukon.
He played at Atlanta, I think, and then they signed him this offseason to a very big contract.
Yes. He's incredibly fast. I know that. I've watched him a few times. They have a dude named Roy Robertson Harris. And his stats.
He went to Kentucky, right? I think he's a defensive lineman.
His stats from just last week against the Chargers, I never really noticed him in watching the game, but he finished with 7 tackles, a sack, 4 tackles for loss, 2 passes deflected, and 2 QB hits.
Oh, man.
So that guy, you know, did some damage. And also noticing one that I noticed in the game was Arden Key, which is a name that's kind of been floating around for a while. I think he was kind of like a trade deadline candidate for the Chiefs, maybe like a low buyer. That dude was terrorizing him last week. He was in the backfield all the time. They got Josh Allen, the better Josh Allen, on their defense. And so they got us a few rush guys. Trayvon Walker, who I thought was about to be a giant bust as the first overall pick. I think he's been okay the last half of the season. He showed up a few times last week. So a few good pass rushers. And then that one guy in the corner who I don't know anything about other than I'm looking at a PFF grade and he has a good grade. Everybody else on their defense, pretty vulnerable. And I think the way to beat them is through the pass. And if you can just block those edge guys and this Roy Robertson Harris, then I think you got a pretty good job ahead of you. But those are the guys to watch on the Jacksonville defense.
I know that they also, in this past draft, they added Devin Lloyd. Not like a perfect prospect, but really good looking college inside linebacker. And they're running a 3-4, and it's having, you know, Walker and Allen, the first overall pick and like the 7th overall pick as your, you know, defensive ends, your or in this case, outside linebackers. It's going to be tough. And then when you've got, you know, a highly rated college prospect and then a guy that was already established that you gave a huge contract to playing inside, the linebackers on that group look pretty awesome on paper. I mean, I don't have any vivid memories of that Chiefs-Jags game the first time. Since you rewatched it, what was working in that game for the Chiefs offense?
So the Jags played a lot of zone and the Chiefs did like a lot of deep crossers. Like in the first half, it was just like, you know, they'd kind of have a deep route and then have a guy coming from across the field and run like a 20 yard across route pretty much. And that person was running wide open most of the game. So that seems like a pretty simple correction for the Jags, or at least one thing to kind of, hey, let's at least take this away. It was Pacheco's first game in his new role where he took over as the lead back. He did fumble on that first drive, but they stuck with him and then looked extremely good. It's just, he had like the, when you fumble early in the game and someone just like, all right, now I'm out to prove something for the rest of the game. You know, Kareem Hunt obviously comes to mind, but Pacheco ran hard there. Mahomes was running it a bunch. He took off and ran, numerous times, especially in the first half when they were lightened up. I mean, they got up 21-0 in this game. So, you know, take that stuff, you know, and use that. And then everything else after that was just kind of like, well, let's just kind of get to the end here, you know, Andy Reid style. Yeah. It was the Kadarius Toney game. I think his second game with the Chiefs, but the one he was really breaking out, had that deep catch down the sideline, had a couple plays where he was breaking tackles. And that will be big going into this week, with looking like Mecole Hardman is out. And then last note, we had a 3rd-and-1 fullback trap get stuffed. Mm. And Tony Romo even says in playoff football, these can be huge. And I was just like, oh my God, I keep talking about 3rd-and-1s. We keep talking about the fullback trap. And here it is all coming together in a week 10 game. I don't even know why he mentions the playoffs randomly. But just another thing to keep your eye on. And something I am obviously keeping my eye on. I'm kind of obsessed with it. What the Chiefs are going to do on 3rd-and-1s. For this postseason.
You know, I'm really interested to see, I guess, ultimately, like, just who's active this weekend, because
it's looking like Mecole is out. I'm not sure if you saw it today, but it looks like he is not going to play, which I would just like to say, it might be a bit of a blessing, just because there's so many guys that you're kind of juggling. Looks like Sky Moore is going to come back. Like, trying to fit in Kadarius Toney and Mecole Hardman and Sky Moore into this offense, I didn't want, like, trying to get all of them involved and it end up being like a negative thing instead of just like using a few of them. And I don't know, maybe they wouldn't use Sky Moore at all or something. I'm not sure what the plan was, but honestly, having one fewer guy, even if he's explosive and potentially super important, like Mecole can be sometimes, it might be a good thing to have less and just focus on what you have.
I get the sense. And I mean, I guess there's always a possibility that, you know, the Chiefs are able to just use Mecole in Atlanta. Or I guess it could still potentially be at Arrowhead, but like use Mecole in the AFC Championship game or have him ready for the Super Bowl or whatnot. But I almost just feel like we've just seen the last of Mecole as a Chief potentially.
But I think he tried to like come back and re-injured whatever it was. Cause it seems like he was supposed to be back and, you know, was on track to, and then all of a sudden something changed and now he's back on the pine, I guess, for good.
His body is not responding to him being active is just kind of the way it's coming across to me. A guy that they like activated, quote unquote, but not onto the roster, but he's practicing now, as we've got Clyde back. And a lot of people are a little worried about that.
We talked about that. I'm a little worried. What do you want to do? Do you want to get him a little work? See what kind of shape he's in? Maybe some juice, give him a drive in there, or do you want no Clyde?
I don't need to see anything from Clyde. I mean, I'll say this. He knows the playbook. And technically, he can do a lot of things because of his knowledge of the playbook and the way that they've deployed him. But I just don't, like, in what way is Clyde Edwards-Helaire a weapon for the Chiefs? If I had to say anything based on this season, I would say that he could potentially help in the red zone. I mean, I don't necessarily want to hand him the ball in the red zone. But if we're just looking at like another capable person in short area stuff, and if McColl's not going to be out there, and, you know, Sky cut his hand open, I believe was the injury. Like his hand, like the palm of his hand gets cut open in a game. And so that's what he's been trying to heal up from. You know, and the receiver with a cut hand, that doesn't seem like a good idea. I don't know. I guess I'm trying to talk myself into like, if they put him out there, then okay. But like, doesn't it feel a little bit like the only reason that they might try to give Clyde touches is because he's a first round pick? And like, want to just abandon him, but at the same time, it's like, does he need it? Like, do we need him? What's he going to bring to the table? And I don't think he's much better than Pacheco at much of anything. I don't think he's better than McKinnon at much of anything. If he's your third, okay. I mean, I'd be just as fine with Ronald Jones or Melvin Gordon or, you know, whatever. Like, I don't.
Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, he's still
Wayne,
here.
Wayne Gallman. Let's throw Wayne Gallman in there.
We let go of Gallman to Gordon.
Jesus.
Gallman's gone for Gordon.
We still got Bryan Edwards. Do we keep him?
No, he's gone too.
Jesus, what do we do? Who's the practice squad coach?
Yeah.
Get him out of here.
But I guess I'll just be interested to see like who's active, you know. Ultimately, it's just going to be the Patrick Mahomes show. And I would imagine that they'll be, you know, using as much of Travis Kelce as possible. I think that maybe Juju probably feels a little fired up. Like, I think that he like started strong but got hit early too, and it was just like, dang it, you know. And that was like when Juju was hitting his stride. I mean, that was around week 10 or so, and I think that he had come off of two or three really good games when it looked like, okay, oh, Juju is the number one receiver, not named Kelce, obviously, and then he gets knocked out and ends up missing a few games. So he might have a little extra And he hasn't really been fully deployed, I think, the back half of the season here since that concussion, where it's like they haven't seemed to be like, we're going to force the ball to Juju. You know, he's the number two option. It hasn't really felt like that. And so I think that the Chiefs have maybe kind of held some things back a little bit. We kind of expected that in this weaker half of the schedule, especially when you start to see that, like, you know, two of your last seven games are against the Broncos team that was just, even though they kept those games close, like, you just kind of knew this, the competition level wasn't going to be what you thought at the beginning of the year. And so I think that we got to recognize, like, it's a playoff game. Even if it's the Jags, like, there's no more hiding anything. This is play your best football, call your best plays, put your best guys on the field. And so I think that the Chiefs are going to be looking pretty great. That's my expectation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll fully expect to as well. There's no reason Mahomes shouldn't light up the secondary. It's not a good pass defense. The only reason would be if those defensive ends start getting pressure, which we have seen before. So, I mean, it's in the cards. But I think Andy also knows that that's how they stand a chance to wreck this game. So he'll be fully prepared to not let those two wreck the game. Looking at Juju's stats here. So in the middle of the season, he kind of breaks out. He goes for 113, 124, and then 88, and then has that Jags game where he gets hurt and then doesn't go over 40 yards in six of his next eight games. So he's been held under 40 yards in six of the last eight games of the season. So yeah, he hasn't really been utilized too much. So it would be nice to see him, you know, really get going. One other thing in this game, in rewatching that. So everybody talks about the Chiefs' three turnovers. One of those happened right before halftime. If you remember, we fumbled on a kickoff, and the Jags got it and basically kicked a field goal right away and then missed it. They missed two short field goals in that game, which are missed field goals are essentially turnovers that don't count as turnovers, and it's the exact same thing. And then they also punted on fourth and two in Chiefs territory early on, punted on fourth and seven around midfield when they were down 17 in the fourth, which seemed really strange, especially for Doug Peterson. That won't happen this week. Doug Peterson is going to be, he's insanely aggressive last week. I mean, he just came out early in that game. He went for that fourth and seven, which I did not like. And it was just like, whoa, what are you doing? Like, he had, I think it was a 49, 50 yard field goal, and just, nope, we're just going to go for it. And it led to one of Trevor Lawrence's many interceptions. And, you know, this week he already had a quote about, you know, that Chiefs offense score points. We're going to have to do everything we can to keep up with them. And it was basically just like, here's a forewarning. Ain't going to be punting this week. Fourth downs are going to be very live for the Jags. They have nothing to lose. And it's not like a coach that's, you know, just kind of saying that we have nothing to lose and use that as an attitude. He's going to coach like it. So anything he's got, he's going to pull out. And one of the most aggressive coaches that there is in the NFL. So, I mean, any fourth down, I mean, fourth and inches at his own 10-yard line, I could see him going for it. Fourth and 10 at our 40-yard line, I could see him going for it. Like, it's just going to be that kind of thing. And that's what kind of makes them scary, is Doug Peterson and his aggressiveness, is because, you know, you got a team outmatched like that. They need to do something to slim the margins. And that's one way that they can do it, is by being overly aggressive and converting on those chances.
And it seems like, you know, in that first game, it obviously didn't end up going their way for one reason or another, despite the stolen possessions. But I mean, gosh, dude, the opening kick is an onside kick. Like, he was coaching that game the same way.
I bet he wishes he had saved that for this game, because he's like, damn, we fucking had it. We got him on it. But I mean, the Chiefs are going to be so ready for that this week. It's hard to imagine that exact same thing happening again. But just stuff like that, like a fake punt, wouldn't shock me whatsoever. Just anything Dougie's got. And you know Dougie's got a lot. You know he's got a lot.
And so, and the worry now, obviously the Chiefs have struggled on special teams this year. That's a phase where they are in some ways like susceptible, I guess. I would say that ever since they finally stopped forcing Sky Moore to try to return punts, that I haven't really thought about punts much. And there was a minute there where I was thinking about it every single day. Like, oh God, they're going to punt. And I just was not comfortable. That happened for about 2 weeks, maybe even three. And so I feel better in like the return game, I guess. But I mean, when you think about one of the most important plays in the Chiefs' run to the Super Bowl in 2019, in that game against Houston, Sorensen making the tackle on the fake punt. And then on the very next play, almost, he makes that tackle. The Chiefs go down and score. And the next time that Sorensen is on the field is the kickoff, and he dislodges that ball that Darwin.
He forced it, and then Darwin gets it and stands there.
So
you have run!
Back-to-back special teams plays made by a maligned figure in Chiefs lore, but obviously a guy that's clutch, and at that point was like 30 years old. And I want you guys, I just want people to recognize that some of the struggles that the Chiefs have had on special teams this year is because they're playing so young. They got rid of a bunch of those core special teamers, and so if the Jags are looking for an edge, they're probably going to try to do some weird stuff on special teams. And because these guys are rookies, it seems like no matter what Dave Tobe does, those guys are going to make mistakes. And maybe like Tobe still has to take responsibility because he's the coach, but he also has a long track record of success in this league, and these guys do not. And so he's going to be doing a ton of prep this week, trying to get them ready for all the weird stuff. It's going to be whether or not they recognize it and execute it on if the Jags can catch them.
It's also a good reminder of how random NFL playoff games can be. I mean, it's just one game that is so magnified that, you know, a guy like Daniel Sorensen at that point was a cult hero. Like, he hasn't really been picked apart on defense, and some of that cult hero stuff kind of went away. I still think he'll be beloved overall just because of those types of plays. Like, he just came up with all kinds of plays like that. He forced the fumble against the Browns in that divisional round game I just rewatched. So he comes up with big plays like that, and it's just going to be someone random. You know, Deion Bush just comes up with a big play in this game. Chris LeMans, and it's just the right guy in the right place at the right time making a play, and it can just happen. It's just going to be random, but it can go down in lore like that, and that's just what NFL playoff games are like. And one last thing on Andy versus Doug, because I got the stat here. Andy Reid versus former assistants. Now, this is something that Bill Belichick actually has struggled with, which is very paradoxical because Andy Reid has this fantastic coaching tree. We almost had the entire Final Four of the AFC playoffs be Andy Reid, former assistants. If the Ravens would have beaten the Harbaugh. Bengals, because we would have had Harbaugh in there too. So Belichick's coaching tree kind of sucks, but has success against Belichick. Andy has this fantastic coaching tree, but Andy has been very good against assistants. He is now 24-8 in his career against former assistants, and 4-0 in playoff games against former assistants.
And then what's his record against Peterson?
Peterson, I think we lost.
I thought it was 3-0 against Doug.
That makes
what I thought I saw.
I'm trying to think of
one of them would have been the Jags game this year, so they played the Eagles twice.
Yeah, I don't think we lost. I don't remember losing to the Eagles. We rarely lose to the NFC, so I'm going to bet on has not lost to Doug Peterson.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, look, folks, it's definitely not it would be unwise to think that this game is in the bag because it is the playoffs. And as you mentioned, you know, anything can and often does happen. I mean, gosh, we had to watch Chad Henne finish a playoff game for crying out loud, and not for the good reason. I think that if the Chiefs come out and they're focused and they're clicking, they're just clearly a better team than the Jaguars. And the Jaguars, I think, as we've mentioned, like the most dangerous thing about them is that at this point, they probably feel like they're playing with house money. I mean, they had the first overall pick last year. they had the worst record in football. And at this point, people are saying that their coach last year is like one of the three worst NFL tenures ever. I mean, people were worried. People were wondering if Trevor Lawrence, the prince who was promised, apparently, people were worried after that year, thinking like, is this guy just not going to do it? And when they start 3-7, people were probably still worrying that. But this team is on a run right now. They're hot. And I think that they're going to be able to make this game competitive, but it just kind of depends on what version of the Chiefs show up. And I hope that we see the what I think is an obvious difference in experience and in overall talent. I just hope that that shows up on Sunday, because I just don't want to go through a stressful playoff game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. It won't feel right to me, and I want to feel right this weekend.
Well, anyways, I mean, we've seen how that pressure can build. Players start thinking about that too. Like, shit, why is this game close? The longer it stays close, it's just like, I mean, you saw the Bills in that third quarter. The Dolphins took the lead, and the Bills got so tight. They could not do anything. The Dolphins had three drives to take control of that game, but they're playing Skylar Thompson at quarterback. If they just have like a competent, and honestly, I mean, Skylar didn't look good or anything, but his teammates didn't help him at all. Like, they were dropping so many passes. Like, if the Dolphins had just played well, man, the Bills would have felt that pressure, and woo, they were ready to get upset in that game. I mean, the Bengals got outplayed. Did the Bengals offense score in the second half? Like, they couldn't move the ball against the Ravens. And I know the Ravens defense gives up some troubles, but man, you see what playoff games can be like, especially if they get tight in the second half. I mean, I don't have to remind Chiefs fans of this, of what an upset can look like at home once that nervous energy starts radiating through the stadium. The best way to combat that is to just get on them early and stay on them. And, you know, it's easier said than done, obviously. But I do think the Chiefs, I think that Raiders game was a very good thing. I think they went into playoff mode in that game, and they treated it like a playoff game. And it was just like, okay, now it starts now, you know. Not so it's like, I've seen someone kind of had a quote like, the Jags have been in playoff mode for 3 weeks now. They've been in a must-win mode, and really the whole second half of the season. I mean, their season's been on the line essentially every single week, whereas the Chiefs have just been la-di-dying up until, you know, the Raiders game, which earns them a bye. Like, that was their chance to turn on. But they are, you know, what do you want to call it? Battle-tested and ready for that type of intensity, and the Chiefs have to come out and match it.
Did you say that Tyreek Hill was having some trouble catching the ball in that game? Not doing any favors for his quarterback?
He was the least of them, I think. It was mostly Waddle. Waddle okay. Was horrible.
I didn't watch it all that close.
Oh, boy.
I was just like, man, shocker. Some balls going off Tyreek's hands, maybe into the hands of a defender? Where have I seen that before?
I had forgotten until, I don't know why I rewatched it, but in that Bengals game, that overtime throw to Tyreek pretty much hit him right in the chest. Like, I'm not sure how you remember. In overtime, we went 3-and-out, third down, Mahomes takes a deep shot, and it's right to Mahomes between two defenders. It kind of like bounces right off his chest, his shoulder pad, and it's just like, I forgot how much of a drop it was watching that live, because everything was just, it was all happening, like, it's just fucking chaos at that point. But watching that, that was a bona fide drop to lose that game.
You know, I...
Tyreek's fault.
Looking back, to me, I want to find the positive. When it comes to the Chiefs, I always want to find the positive in anything that happens. And to me, the positive of losing that game, the Bengals last year, there's a few. One that I think should jump out to everybody is the season that you got from Chris Jones. It seems like he recognizes that he came up short. He ended up having to deal with questions about not having any career sacks in the playoffs. And he might shrug it off and whatever, but I think that he is a man that's been very motivated this season. And if you want to talk about the contract and everything else, that's fine too. All right. But Chris Jones has been possessed this year. His best season as a pro.
You get one this week? getting one?
I expect him to.
He was an animal in that first Jags game. He was terrorizing Trevor.
I would not be surprised if he wrecked the game on Saturday. Now,
yeah, 1.5 sacks against Trevor in the last meeting.
So the thing that is kind of jumping out to me a little bit, thinking about and trying to learn from that Bengals game, I saw a stat after Jags Chargers that after the Chargers were up 27-0, here's how the play calling went for the Chargers offense. And it was something like they had 28 passes and, you know, 7 called runs or something, 7 handoffs. I think that in a world where practically every single play is some version of an RPO, we probably need to recognize that the quarterback has a lot of decision-making power on run pass. And whether that's Herbert or Mahomes or whatever, they probably want to throw the ball. And I get it. So we can't place the run-pass ratio strictly at the feet of coaches when RPO is involved in so many of these plays. But, like, do we really think that RPOs are actually run-pass options? No, it's play action.
Not for Patty.
Calling it run-pass option, but
it's a run-pat option.
Yeah, it's not a handoff. It's a play action. And so, look, here's the thing. I went back and tried to tally it up, and I believe that after the Chiefs got up, whatever it was, like 21-3 against the Bengals, from then on, Andy had like 28 passes and 10 runs through all of the second half and overtime. And you can include in those numbers the last drive of the first half that ended with Tyreek getting tackled on that wonky play that seems like it kind of turned the tide in the game. But that was, they got the ball with like a minute, and so they were throwing on every play on the way down the field. Still, play calling a little lopsided. Kind of feels like when you just look at those raw numbers, well, if you're winning, you should run the ball. That's not necessarily what the Chiefs do. Certainly not something that Andy Reid's got a track record of doing, leading with the run. But I think that having that experience against the Bengals and ultimately the way that they've kind of used their running backs, even if throws to Jerick McKinnon is us using the run game, right? I think that they're probably a little more prepared to play with a lead and hold a lead because of that loss. That would be my thinking. Could be wrong, but a lot of those same guys are here, and certainly Patrick and Andy are here. And if they're going to take something from that Bengals loss about their offense, it might just be like, we gotta be more aggressive. But unfortunately, it's also a little complicated because, man, that Bengals defense and Lou Anarumo, we've talked about him. He might just kind of have Mahomes' number a little bit. We'll see.
I saw you tweeting about that, and I thought it was interesting. So I did go back in my notes because I remember people saying every time you blow a lead, it's either you ran too much, you got too conservative, or you passed too much, you didn't conservative enough. Like, yeah. There is no, if you blow a big lead, you did one or the other, and you're going to catch flack for it. So, I mean, the only way to avoid it is to not blow the lead. You know, the not running clock stuff is very valid, in my opinion, because if you have a huge lead like that, we're talking like 27-0, you should be taking it down to 1 second every single snap. That's totally valid. In that Chiefs-Bengals game, went back and checked my notes. So they go up 21-3, and the Bengals come back and make it 21-10. So they never take a snap up 21-3. And then that final drive that you said, like before half, is only a minute, so they're passing it there. They only had 3 drives until the game was tied up. And it was 5 plays, 2 runs, 3 passes, 5 plays, 2 runs, 3 passes, and 2 plays, 1 run, and then the Mahomes interception on RPO. So they were pretty balanced for like the chance that they had. Yeah. And this is just me kind of absolving blame from them, but
it was a 3 and out and 3 throws in overtime too.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes. In the grand scheme, it wasn't like blowing the lead. It was just in the grand scheme, we should have taken some pressure off of Pat, especially once you see him pressing so much and run the ball more. But, you know, this is always, I'm always going to lean. Do you want to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands? I'm fine not doing it. If we go down with Patrick Mahomes doing that, I will be fine with it every single time because he is Patrick Mahomes. If you have Alex Smith back there, if you have Justin Herbert back there, then I would get on my high horse and be pissed off about it. Okay, run the fucking ball. Like take the pressure off him. And still, I mean, that might be the right move, but I don't think I will ever reach a point in Patrick Mahomes' career where I'm like, I want you to take the ball out of his hands, you know, often. Like, don't put the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands. I always want the ball in his hands, because if we lose by not putting it in his hands, then I'm going to be pissed off. So it's just kind of a weird thing that you know, you got to choose. And it's tough to be up like that, because you either have to choose if you're going to be conservative or be aggressive. And it's going to look horrible if you blow the lead. So just don't blow the lead. And yet we see it time and time again. I mean, it's way tougher to protect a lead in the NFL than people think. Like, it just happens. Look at all these comebacks, especially in playoff games. I saw it was three of the biggest five comebacks in NFL history are in the wild card round. Like, think of how many more regular season games there are than playoff games. And yet three of the five have happened in this one round, which is, that's just a coincidence, I think. But it's also, you get good teams, they can get down, but they can also come back. It just happens. So that's my little rant on comebacks. The main thing, don't let them score. That's the best way to not allow a comeback.
Yeah. It sounds like, Dirk, what you're saying is that if the Chiefs are going down, you want to go down with Mahomes.
I want to go down on Mahomes.
That's correct. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, cool. All right. My notes have been exhausted. I am out of notes. No notes.
No. I do want to note, okay, a couple things. The Chiefs are favored on their 14th straight playoff game, which is an NFL record, which is kind of a good thing and a bad thing, because I think it means they've lost a lot of games that they should have won, so that they didn't advance to the next week and play as an underdog kind of thing. So that's one part of it. But also, the Chiefs are really good now, and everybody think they're going to win every week. It would be interesting. I think if it's an AFC championship game at a neutral site against the Bills, I think the Bills will be favored. I think it'll be like Bills by 1 or 1.5. So I think that streak could come to an end as soon as next week.
Were the Chiefs favored in the Super Bowl against Tampa?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's hilarious.
Oh, well, think about it. At the time, I mean, we were 15-1 that season. The Bucs were not a great in the regular season.
Were they not? Oh, yeah. You know what? They were a wild card team that year.
Yeah.
I guess I was just looking at Tom Brady and the Bucs and the way they were set up and our offensive line.
Yeah. Because they beat the shit out of us. Yeah. It doesn't seem like we should be favored. But yeah, we were definitely favored in that one. It will be real interesting to see that line. Vegas just loves the Bills, man. I don't understand it, but they cannot get over the Bills. They will continue to favor them as much as they can. And I think being at a neutral site, I think they would favor the Bills. Speaking on Bills-Bengals, I've been favoring the Bengals over the Bills the whole time. I think we both were. But something big was happening this weekend where the Bengals had three offensive linemen now that are out. I'm not sure of their status going into this game. But once that happened, that was when, in that second half, man, the Bengals could not move the ball and they could not block. And if you're missing three of your five offensive linemen, that's totally understandable. As Chiefs fans can relate to a game that we just recently mentioned. But man, if they're missing three linemen, I think they're in a lot of trouble. I mean, in the future against us or this week against the Bills. I know Lyle Collins, I think he's probably done for good. I think he got seriously hurt. But they had two more guys. One was out going into this game last week, and one got hurt during the game. I do not know their status, but that's just something to keep your eye on, the Bengals offensive line.
I believe that the one that missed last week was their center, and the one that got injured last week is their left tackle, Jonah Williams.
Yep.
Dislocated kneecap, similar to Pat, so you know that maybe in a couple weeks he could be okay. Maybe because he's an offensive lineman, he's going to rub some dirt on it and try to go.
I saw someone say it's the second time doing it. Last time he just threw on a brace and played through it. And he's done it this is his second different kneecap. So I'm not sure if it was earlier this year or what, but this guy has dislocated both kneecaps now.
So Jonah Williams, weak in the kneecaps.
Jesus.
All right.
That's not something, not an injury that I want. Not an
no,
injury.
No.
When you sounds, see your kneecap and your calf. That's about as frightening as it is.
Sounds terrible. I'm just trying to hop on, but as soon as I saw that the offensive line was really falling apart, I mean, look, the Bengals did it with the terrible offensive line last year, so I don't want to like count them out. But I probably am now leaning Bills in terms of like who should maybe be favored or who I think is actually going to win. And we also have to keep in mind they might get Micah Hyde back on the field, and whether it's this week, whether it would be next week, whether it would be pending making a Super Bowl. I mean, they have put him in a position to maybe be on the field. And man, I don't want to play an AFC championship game against the Bills at full strength, sans Von Miller.
Yeah, as long as Von's not coming back.
And you know, all the stuff with DeMar Hamlin and everything else, like there's a lot of vibes for the Bills.
I think they have like a wild card of DeMar Hamlin running out with the team. And I think they could have done it this week, and they were like, let's sit on it and have them do it next week, because we can beat the Dolphins without this wild card.
Oh yeah.
Let's do it. I mean, it also kind of makes sense doing it against the Bengals, against the team he was hurt. But I feel like that's going to happen this week, isn't it? Isn't he going to run them out of the tunnel?
I mean, something along those lines. Like, what's the equivalent of banging the drum or something, right? Like, is he going to jump through a table? I don't know what it is for Buffalo, but
they're going to squirt ketchup and mustard all over him.
But yeah, I fully expect DeMar Hamlin to not only be in the building, but be very, very visible to the crowd before the game. And I mean, and look, you know, good for Buffalo. Like the Bills, when they're not playing the Chiefs, I'm generally rooting for them because they're a tortured fan base, just like the Chiefs for many, many years, and they still don't have a Super Bowl victory. Do I want them to win one? No, I don't. Not at my expense. Not at the expense of my happiness as a fan. But yeah, I do think they're probably going to get the Bengals. I think the Bills are going to pull that one out. And so I am expecting next week that Chiefs Bills will be taking place in Atlanta, with the cheapest ticket in the building being around $1,500 is what I saw. It's insane.
I
think it's because they haven't like really released tickets yet or whatever. I don't know, but
I saw someone mention ticket prices, and I looked on SeatGeek and they were not on there. Okay. So I'm not sure.
I saw a picture get tweeted out about finding seats online somewhere, and it was like $1,800 to sit downstairs, and they're like, no wonder they wanted this at a neutral site. I don't think they'll get that high. I mean, look, is Chiefs Bills, let me ask you, we're Chiefs fans, so maybe we're a little too meta. Is Chiefs Bills like the dream matchup for people?
Yeah.
Because of the 13-second game last year, that's what people want to see, not Chiefs Bengals. They want to see Chiefs Bills.
I would equate it. It's the Patriots and the Colts right now.
Okay.
And the Bengals are kind of the Steelers. So people want to see Chiefs and Bills, but the Bengals are kind of just there, and they're going to give both teams a tough game whenever they meet. And that's just kind of the vibe I get. I don't know why. I don't know why the Bills would be above in the pecking order ahead of the Bengals, because the Bengals have really accomplished more, just being around one fewer year, two fewer years, maybe. So maybe that's it. But it is kind of, I mean, it'd be the third year in a row we're playing in the playoffs, and you know that means something. You know, this year Chiefs and Bengals would get to their second year, so then that would start to build as well. But you know, everybody looks back at those Patriots and Colts games, but there wasn't that many. I think there was only three games between Brady and Peyton in the playoffs. Now they played every single regular season, as the Chiefs and Bills will. But there wasn't that many playoff games, and the Chiefs and Bills could already match it with their third meeting this season. They met twice more with Peyton in Denver. because I think there's only five meetings. And it's one of the weirdest stats is that Peyton has a winning record in the playoffs over Brady, which you would, I mean, every time I see it, even knowing the stat, I still see it. And I'm just like, what? How's that possible? Right. But two of those were with the Broncos. But yeah, that's kind of how I see those three teams. And that would be their equivalent to me. But people want Chiefs Bills. People want it. They want it.
I did see that our guy Nick Wright basically said that, like, there is zero argument that Josh Allen should be ranked above Joe Burrow.
I would agree. I agree.
Yeah. And I mean, look, we are in some ways Nick Wright lackeys.
Yeah. His most accomplished lackeys. Sucker out of that, Parkins.
I saw Parkins writing a Bulls book. Is that
writing
right?
Writing a book. He thinks he can outshine us? Nah. 12 years of doing a podcast. Way more impressive. Suck it, C-Dot. Suck it. Who else we got?
Brandon Kiley.
Brandon Kiley, suck it. Mark Carmen, suck it. Jared Carter, suck it. Who else we got? Bob Fesco.
Oh my god! Yeah, you're just naming random people.
Oh man, I was talking with Billy Pesto, and we were talking about Chiefs Bills AFC Championship, and he's like, some Kansas City guy is saying the game will be in Atlanta, and I was like, oh, that's Bob Fesco. Nobody takes him serious. And then I sent him a link of the rant from 2012.
Pumpkin picking.
And I listened to it like three times in a row, man. It was so funny. It's so funny. It could have gone pumpkin picking and pooped on and crapped on.
I gotta say, like, as a especially like while Nick and Danny were there, very, very loyal 610 listener. That one made me laugh a lot because Nick was willing to like make fun of it and like pick apart some of the things that Fesco would say to make it sound more ridiculous. But I think the guy that called in about the Tigers still takes the cake for me. Like I could listen to that once a day and I don't care about the Tigers. Or the Jayhawks or anything, like none of them really matter to me. But that man, really? Really? I mean, it kills me. Radio gold. All right, folks, this has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He's his Dirkness. The Chiefs and Jaguars are playing in the afternoon on Saturday, 3:30 Arrowhead time, I think?
1:30.
1:30? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, in Hermosa Beach. Okay. So, I hope you guys go and have fun and bring us back a win. And we'll talk to you next week. Go Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Oh, wait. Wait. Wait, 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 wait. You said that you were going to polish up your hype speech. Did you decide no hype speech for the Jags? Or did I misinterpret the playoff hype speech and that it needs to be reserved for, like, the Arrowhead Invitational?
Do you want a little hype speech?
Well, you said you were going to write one.
I got a little nugget here. I said I was going to write one.
Or, I don't know. I figured.
All right, fuck it. Let's get hyped. How about this? How about this? All right, so I'm not a big legacy guy, but what's on the line in this game? What's on the line in these playoffs? Patrick Mahomes is a made man if he wins a ring this year. He is a made man. You cannot touch him. Two rings in 5 years. Nobody has ever once uttered the line, he only has two Super Bowl wins. Nobody has ever said that. One ring? Sure. They said it about Rodgers. They said it about Favre. They said it about Peyton until the very end of his career. He lucked out that second one. But he did it. Breeze. But two? Nobody can ever say anything about him. He is a made man at age 27 and has the rest of his career to just pile on accomplishments and accolades and awards. There's all pressure taken off of him. And I know we kind of said that after the first ring, but you still get that. Even among Chiefs fans, that live in fear of this. But Aaron Rodgers only won one ring, even though Aaron Rodgers sucks donkey dick. He fucking sucks. Have you watched him play football? He sucks. You know who doesn't suck in January? Fucking Patrick Mahomes. He does not suck. Aaron Rodgers sucks. You see him against the Lions in January? Vintage Rodgers? God, he's terrible. That guy won back-to-back MVPs a year ago. It's ridiculous. Patrick Mahomes, made man if he wins another ring. How about for the Chiefs? Doing this in what should be a down year. It should be a down year. If the Chiefs win a Super Bowl this year, it is the official launch of their dynasty. Are they already dynasty? Maybe. Possibly. Could be debated. But if they win a Super Bowl this year, they're a fucking dynasty. Or, as our friend of the podcast, Tywin Lannister would say, a dynasty. The Kansas City Chiefs are a dynasty.
And
that's my hype speech. That's what's on the line for the Chiefs in these playoffs. Go out, get it done.
I always love a little legacy talk with his darkness.
I don't like doing it.
I do want to point something out. Maybe they haven't uttered the words, he's only won two rings, but there are still a lot of questions about Eli Manning, who has won two Super Bowl rings. Just putting that out there.
Not as far as what he's accomplished. His career, sure. But he would already be not the worst quarterback to win two rings, even if his career ended the day after winning a Super Bowl this year.
All right, folks. This actually has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He's his darkness. Do me a favor. Do us all a favor, Chiefs fans. Don't be like Bill Simmons this week and say that it almost looks too easy for the Kansas City Chiefs. Uh-oh. It's going to be a tough game on Saturday. If they get through it, it's going to be another tough game before they can have a chance to lift that Super Bowl trophy. But let's take this one seriously. Let's show up ready for what's at stake.
Go, baby.
Talk to you next week.
Cheers.
Go join.